Hi, guys. Welcome to an episode of Natural Fertility with Dr. Jane. I am Dr. Jane, and today I'm joined by Dr. Elisa, one of my practitioners. We are in the running for the top downloaded podcast episode today. And you have a hot topic that you wanted to talk about because it's popping up on your algorithm. And yes. When you suggested it, I was like, heck yeah, let's break it down. Let's hope people understand.
So we always talk about the things that are relevant and keep popping up in our life. So I feel like I'm having a lot of these conversations about like, what is the man's role in, you know, fertility, and like, does he build the placenta? Like, I keep talking to other chiros and they're like, oh, you're in fertility now? Like, have you seen that viral video of Marcia Schaefer talking about how he built the placenta? And I'm like, yes, how much time do you have? Like, can we dive into it?
Yeah. So we're going to dive into that. And I think it's not even the role that the man has in the fertility, but the role that the male sperm has in the pregnancy. And we're not going to layer it into the health of the child, because I want to say that's obvious. And there is a lot more studies that are showing in terms of the methylation and the glitches in it and how that impacts generations to come, and the issues that we can see with even depression and mood and how that was connected to the father's methylation pattern. So there's a lot more of these kind of generational, trigenerational studies that are coming out, but we're going to really dive into like, what is the role of the sperm through the pregnancy, and how much of it is true that like he builds the placenta versus what else, you know, what else does the male sperm do? So jump into it. Let's start.
Let's get into it. Half true, half not true, right? As far as when we're looking at what the sperm does and if it does build the placenta, yes, 50% maternal DNA, 50% paternal DNA builds the embryo, and then the embryonic tissue builds the placenta. But depending on the health of the man and obviously the health of the woman, what is that embryonic tissue going to look like? So diving in a little bit deeper to, how does that happen?
We have 50% maternal DNA, 50% paternal. And then what is the paternal genes? This is where I think the research is that the paternal genes are influencing the growth of the placenta. So it's the genetic drive that's making the placenta, but the actual tissue is still going to be 50% maternal, 50% paternal.
Yeah. And so I have this conversation with my patients a lot when we're looking at like the deeper testing and like how much work does the egg have to do? So when the egg and the sperm meet, right, they have to take the DNA from both sides, combine, create that new structure, essentially. And so the egg is going to be working really, really hard in order to make corrections and make changes, because the body wants an ideal environment, right? So if the egg is working really, really hard because the sperm quality is not as good, then we have things like implantation issues and, you know, going into what the environment of the uterus looks like, and all of that is really important. Mm-hmm. And one of my clients was like, oh, that sounds familiar. The egg and the woman are doing all the work, but it's, you know, what the man is delivering.
Yes. It is, the process of creation is largely put on the woman, because it is the woman's body that is doing that. So I think this is why women feel kind of the quote unquote heavy burden of it all. But what is important to understand is this kind of feminine and masculine energy is, in order for the woman to be able to step into her feminine energy, which is the energy of creation and intuition and trust and, you know, essentially just following through and letting go and surrendering, she needs a strong masculine presence. And what we've noticed, and this is something that I've, you know, I can speak closely to because this was a very big pattern for me and I still can get stuck in it, is where I actually take on the masculine energy very easily. So I become the doer, the go-getter, I force things as opposed to step back and let my body do, you know, what it's designed to do. Now, it's not just when I'm not just talking about in pregnancy, but in the career-driven world. So women are now building their careers, they're waiting, they're traveling, they're wanting to experience life, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that. But when we get stuck in that fight, in that masculine energy, and then in that fight or flight, we almost get upset that, like, why is my body not doing what it's supposed to be doing? Well, the feminine energy is very different and it's very soft. And for most women, like, I have clients who are like, I don't even know what that is. Like, I've never experienced that. I never had women around in my life who were like that. My mom is, you know, always drove the house. Like, my dad wasn't even around, or my dad was just kind of present, as you know, just kind of there instead of actually guiding, protecting the family. So that's the component where I'm like, yeah, that the woman does a lot. But mm-hmm. in order for her to do a lot, she needs this really stable, grounding energy, which should be the masculine energy. And I see a lot of men who don't understand that role because the women are overpowering their own masculine energy. And so then the male kind of withdraws. And then there's a lot of toxic masculinity stuff that's going on. And the male part, I think, is just as important to help the women get to that place. But the woman is going to do most of the work. There's, you know, there's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, that shows up on both sides, right? Like lifestyle wise, but then also when we look at deeper into the science of it, where like that feminine and masculine role has to show up in that implantation portion. And it's hard. It's hard for a lot of people, you know, especially nowadays, like you said, where we're so hyper-focused on our careers and in our lives and all of that. But when you look at the nitty-gritty, like that that shows up in the science as well, which is a new concept to kind of think about.
Yeah. Yeah. And so basically, if we look at the paternal genes, they will promote the growth of the placenta, but the paternal genes are still going to drive 50% of the development of the DNA. And so if we take it to like fertilization and what happens in the zygote, which is just two cells, and then it goes to the blastocyst, you know, and then it multiplies. The blastocyst stage is where most of the time in IVF, if you have done IVF or done research on that, you know that that's when they will retrieve, or sorry, that's when they will actually do the implantation. But it's when the egg and the sperm meet, the egg will clean up any DNA damage, like you were saying, Dr. Lisa, and then the fertilization will happen. And within that fertilization, there's a lot that happens within the methylation. So methylation is like this foundational component to having not just successful fertilization, but honestly, like the download that zygote is going to take from both the mom and the dad. And then it's like its own independent structure. As soon as it's two cells, and there's theories that it's like, that's when the soul comes in. Like the soul comes in as soon as it's, boom, it's its own, it's downloaded the genetic code, and then it goes. And so the problem is, what is it downloading? Mm-hmm. If it's, and the beautiful thing is, and you're going to talk about this, is like, we can test methylation. We can look at the actual methylation cycle, and it's not just your MTHFR gene. Mm-hmm. And then it's also the nutrients that are involved in making methylation run smoothly. So then when that egg and that sperm meet, and it's the embryo, the zygote, you know, your baby, it's not even an embryo yet, but it's downloading the genetic code of the information that's happening from all of the preconception care you're doing. And then from there, like you were saying, the 50% maternal, 50% paternal, the methylation a lot of the times is going to drive because there's like such a high demand. And obviously the environment and all the nutrients that are involved in that is going to play a really big role. It's like, I don't want to get too like scientific, but I just want people to like understand like what actually happens. And sometimes if you don't understand why you can't get pregnant, if you just look at what has to happen during pregnancy, then you'll go, oh. Mm-hmm. I get it. Like, that's why my immune system condition, my autoimmune condition, is preventing me from getting pregnant, because it's actually an immune reaction. So if my immune system is already fucked, I can't have that immune reaction that I'm supposed to.
Right. And so it goes back to like lifestyle and the health quality of your health is going to directly impact that. So when we look at the methylation, that shows us a lot about what your lifestyle is and things that you might not even be telling us, right? So that's, mm-hmm. you know, the obesity factor or, you know, the metabolic dysfunction. How are you detoxing? Like, is your body able to take in environmental toxins or other things? Like the world we live in, we walk around, we're getting toxins all the time. How does your body process that and release that?
Or does it hold on to all of it?
Exactly. Right. So lack thereof, you know, if your methylation process isn't working optimally, and that all directly impacts the quality of your sperm, which goes back into when the sperm meets the egg, like how hard is the body having to work or the egg is having to work to repair that?
Yeah. I love what you said that because I'll review case studies with you and I have not sat in front of these patients for 2 hours and gotten to know them. And I will look at their labs and I'll be like, is she digesting anything? Like, is she sleeping? Is he like, what's happening? Because you could tell that it's like, this process is really strained. Why? Mm-hmm. You know, and then sometimes we have to look at deeper testing to understand why that process is a strain. Like you said, environmental toxic load, sperm can become this dumping ground for toxins because anything that your body produces, and whether that's stool, urine, sweat, tears, your breath, like we're detoxing all the time. And then secretions. So for women, it will be vaginal secretions. And for men, it won't be the seminal fluid. Your body's just going to try to get things out. You know, it doesn't want in there. So yeah, we can tell through the testing. You can't really hide, you know? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when I look at the methylation side by side, this is where I get, you know, for one partner and the other, this is where it's fascinating because you can see that they're either very opposing or very mm-hmm. complementary, but depleted in the same areas. And so then I know, hey, when the egg and the sperm tries to meet, they don't, and there's this demethylation, remethylation that's happening, aka, you know, the methyl groups are rearranging themselves. Essentially, because you're depleted in the same things, the body doesn't have enough. And mm-hmm. so it can't, even if it regroups itself and tries to correct itself, if it doesn't have the nutrients, it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't have the material, it doesn't have the material, it can't do it. And so then we're looking at whether that's a chemical pregnancy or no pregnancy at all, or, you know, other implantation failures. It's, you could see it.
Yeah. And toxins, inflammation load, all of that impacts it. Like not just the quality of your sperm, but the quality of your seminal fluid, because that's also the uterus is being exposed to that. And that's almost like a priming ground for, you know, the embryo to implant because it's a foreign object, right? Like it's new. And that goes back to that autoimmune or that immune response in the female's body, where if you don't have good quality sperm and seminal fluid, like you're not optimally priming the uterus for implantation of something that feels like it's foreign to the female's body. So it's important that inflammation, gut, infection, all of that is not present to optimize that process.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that I learned very recently, but essentially you can have, you know, we can look at the vaginal microbiome and we can see what's going on in the vaginal microbiome. Obviously, you can look at the uterine microbiome. That's a lot, you know, that's a bigger surgery. But you look at the vaginal microbiome, and the mistake that I made where I would just assume that, okay, if we see something in the vaginal microbiome, like a ureaplasma, we need to treat both. And mm-hmm. we do. But that male might have other things that he is working through that we are not aware of. So, you know, stay tuned. But I'm looking at the seminal microbiome panels and how we can test that, because the other layer of that, if I see in the vaginal microbiome, like the staph or the E. coli, that's really high, that's actually mm-hmm. likely coming from the seminal microbiome, mm-hmm. which means that's why she's having all the autoimmune reactions, or where she's just having, you know, an autoimmune system that's flared because she's getting sensitive. And if you're thinking about the ejaculation, like that's going in there, you know, mm-hmm. it's going inside the body, and the woman has to work with that microbiome, mm-hmm. that there's a lot of meshing of the microbiome, if you will, that happens during intercourse. It's the deepest, you know, the deepest share, if you will. So yeah, like you have to look and understand what that microbiome is doing on both sides and see where the mismatch is happening and who's triggering what and who needs a little bit more help clearing. Because I've had, you know, male patients clear something really quick and the female patients are still struggling and vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a whole, you know, comprehensive look at everything too, of like how that's interacting like with your gut and your microbiome and, you know, the sandwich of your reproductive organs in between the two. And so you got to look a lot deeper on both sides of the partner to make sure that that's optimized. Absolutely.
Yeah. So a big component that we wanted to talk about is that, you know, the sperm is not just bringing DNA. It is bringing these epigenetic instructions. And if you're new to, there is the genetics and then there is the science of epigenetics, which is you can change the expression of genes based on your environment. So certain environments will turn certain genes on and off. And, you know, it's interchangeable. So you can have an environment that's very toxic, highly inflamed, you know, pathogenic, all of that stuff, that will turn on certain genes that are more associated with disease. And then it will turn the other genes off that are associated, you know, with lower risk of cardiovascular health and all that jazz, and then vice versa. So the epigenetic instructions is where that's really, that's what the sperm is carrying. And I talked about this with, you know, other practitioners on the podcast. When we say things like IVF can bypass male fertility, I just think it's the most ignorant thing you can say. It's like, because you're choosing the sperm, you're telling me you have bypassed his crappy methylation, his toxic load, his obesity factors. Like, you haven't passed that. You've just chosen the best out of the, you know what I mean? Like, you're just picking out the best. I don't even know the analogy here, but it's like you're digging in crap. And then you're trying to find something that's good. It's like, what are you talking about? You haven't bypassed anything. So I don't know if you want to talk about the kind of the obesity and the metabolic health that the influence that will have on the placenta.
Yeah. So just to kind of touch on what you just said, something that I've heard Dr. Nicole say multiple times is genetics loads the gun, but your lifestyle and your environment pulls the trigger. So you can have a gene expression, but how is your lifestyle and how are you turning that on? And then what are you turning on to pass down? And so to go a little bit deeper into like the obesity, like looking at like your body and how hard is your body working? And when we have extra weight, our body has to work a lot harder, and that directly affects the methylation. And so the metabolic disorder and all of that that we're passing down, that we're building that inflammatory state right from conception, which does impact the placenta, which does impact the uterine environment.
That's not what the zygote is going to download, right?
Correct.
So like when I was talking about that download sequence, it's like that's going to be downloaded into the embryo. So the state and the health of the male before he conceives. And the state, obviously, you know, we've said that preconception care is the most important thing that you can do, because that download happens on day two. It's like you don't even know you're pregnant on day two, and then it goes. So, yeah, it's a big deal.
And something we've talked about before, too, is like the sperm turns over every, 70 to 90 days. So you can do the back end work and you can clean up, you know, the environment of your body and create better sperm, create better quality sperm. It may not happen in that first 90 day period that, you know, you're having that turnover, but it's really important to look deeper so that you can take those next steps to know what you need to clean up, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think it was the study Sobri, 2014, Human Reproduction. That's where they look at the paternal obesity that's associated with altered methylation and imprinted genes in offspring. So the father's metabolic health will influence placenta gene expression before implantation even occurs. I think if we just like sit with those papers. Mm-hmm. And this is what, you know, drives me nuts because the IVF clinics, and I have some, you know, IVF docs that pop up on my feed and they'll be like, yeah, we can bypass male fertility issues with IVF. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what about this stuff? Right. And so I guess there's truth to the fact that, yes, you can bypass fertility issues. But what we're looking, at least for this generation and this couple, but if we zoom out and we look at, well, what are we really doing here? And, you know, when I started to specialize in fertility almost 6 years ago now, I said, I don't want to help people just to get pregnant. I think that's mm-hmm. over, like, I had zero issues getting pregnant with my first, and that pregnancy rocked me. And then how difficult that postpartum was. And I didn't even realize how difficult it was until I was out of it. You know, it's like, and then all the stuff that I know my daughter now has to work through because I had zero idea what I was doing. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not just about getting pregnant. Like, getting pregnant is the very beginning of your journey. It's about having healthy children, building generational health, actually being able to enjoy your family instead of, you know, being sick all the time or having sick kids. Like, that's really painful. I've seen a lot of people in my practice, and I don't know if you saw kids, but like having mm-hmm. sick kids is probably one of the most painful things you can go through as a parent.
Yeah. And the placenta is the, you know, the first like thing that's like feeding your child. Like, that's where your child is getting all of its nutrients. And so to have a strong environment and strong like start is super, super important because, like you said, we do see that translate into, you know, the babies and childhood and what these kids have to deal with like later on in life.
Yeah, we just never connect the dots.
No.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're here for. And again, it's I think we can all say like, Katie and I just had a podcast where it's like, there's so many things that we wish we did differently, you know, especially for our first babies, because it's literally you're just stepping in blind. And that's part of the reason that we're here is because we want to teach so then you don't have to go through the same pain cycle. But also know mm-hmm. that as a human, we're always doing the best that we can. It's mm-hmm. I want people to really tune into their intuition and not like trust anyone blindly, including us. You know, like we go through a rigorous interview process to make sure that this is a good fit because I'm not interested in just sitting and taking your money if I don't think I can mm-hmm. help you. Like, that doesn't feel great for me at all. I hate it, actually. Mm-hmm. When I'm like, I told you this thing, you couldn't do it, or we don't matter. Like, no, I want you to find the right practitioner. And so if you're sitting in front of someone and you feel like you're being either lied to, or it's, you know, you're just another person on the conveyor belt, if you feel like you're being ripped off, it's like, it's because you are. Mm-hmm. And it's not because these people in front of you are terrible people. It's like, that's just the system that they have. And so if we want to mm-hmm. break the system, then you have to be an advocate and say, I don't want to be part of the system anymore. And mm-hmm. that's okay that this is how you're treating it, your patients. It's just not what I'm willing to settle for anymore. And then I'm going to go and find someone else. And I promise you, there's other people out there. It's just we kind of say, well, this is the only clinic that's the closest to me. And it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. we got to have stronger, you know, we have to have stronger parameters than this clinic is really close to me.
Yeah. And that's, you know, leads to the next point of like, this is a 50-50 process, and we want to work with both partners because it is important for the male, just as important for the female. But society paints this picture, like you spoke on before, Dr. Jane, of it's the female's doing all of the work. And, you know, she carries the pregnancy, she delivers the baby. It's like, yeah, she does. But also, it's very important for both partners to not only be present, but want that to fix that process. And I think that's something I really loved when I met you, was that it's like, it's not just the female. And that's what I had been struggling with in practice, was I'm just meeting the females, I'm just treating the females. But this is just showing how important it is for both partners to be present in this process.
Yeah, I think we can kind of like if we look at pregnancy as this like really big success, because I genuinely do. Like every time I see a pregnant woman, I was like, good for you. Like, yes. You're amazing. Do you know how much you're doing? But, you know, every time, like if you think about someone getting an award, they'll never be like, thank you. I'm really great that I got this award. I worked so hard. Sure. What do they usually say? They're like, I've had a team of people behind me that have mm-hmm. helped me get to this point. And when they say you need a village to raise a child, the truth is it's like you need a village to help the woman go through pregnancy because it's mm-hmm. a lot. And there's a big strain that happens on the masculine energy, and it should once the woman is pregnant because the woman goes into a highly vulnerable state. She's going to mm-hmm. be tired. She's not going to want to be out. She's not going to be able to cook. She's not going to be able to do all the things that she was able to do. And so the mm-hmm. masculine energy has to come over. And so when I envision a woman who has had a successful pregnancy, I know she didn't do it on her own. I know mm-hmm. she had a team of people supporting her. And I actually see it as a big red flag when the woman gets pregnant and the male just go, done, and he checks out. Mm-hmm. Because if that shift doesn't happen, I know she's not going to be, like, she doesn't feel that support. And sometimes she has a hard time verbalizing it. And I just had a couple who, they unfortunately miscarried. But mm-hmm. I don't want to say fortunately. Like, that was such a big shift for him. He realized that it was a chromosomal issue. And I've seen him change in 3 months more than the past year that we've been working together. In like, mm-hmm. in not even, it hasn't even been 3 months. It was more like 2 months. And the guy is completely different. And that's what makes me feel so much like better as a clinician and mm-hmm. more certain in the next pregnancy for the couple, because I see how much it has clicked for him. It wasn't yeah. just this donation he gave, right? Yeah. It was like, it's your entire being and how you're showing up for this woman and the safety that creates in her nervous system in this team effort versus the mom-child dynamic. Mm-hmm. Just putting that out there, if you have the mom-child dynamic, yeah. you don't have room for a baby because your husband is a baby. You don't have room. You only have so much. Yeah, but like you only have so much room for the mother's energy. And maybe that's your husband, or maybe that's your siblings, or maybe that's your parents. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, you're already using up all of your maternal energy. Mm-hmm. That's why there is no room. And so if you want to create room, you're going to have to tell people how to support you and who do they need to become so you can, you know, you can bring this life into this world.
Yeah. Absolutely. And to never discount the process of pregnancy and childbirth at all. But it is important, like you said, mm-hmm. that mental, emotional component of your partnership and then how you feel throughout your pregnancy, too. So that's the female health, but also the male health and like the science that we just spoke on of like building the pregnancy inside the woman's body is going to impact how she feels throughout that pregnancy as well. You know, if there's that metabolic or infection or, you know, high levels of inflammation, like we see where we have like patients come in and it's, you know, it's they're trying to have their second baby, but we're like, how was your first pregnancy? And that gives us a big window before we know anything about them of what we're probably about to find.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say like pregnancy just brings things to the surface. It doesn't cause them, mm-hmm. but it will definitely mm-hmm. bring things to the surface. And whether that's pregnancy or postpartum period, mm-hmm. because the body is constantly doing the best that it can. And if it doesn't have what it needs, it's going to send out stronger and stronger signals. And this mm-hmm. is where we have this, oh, I am broken, or my body is just, I need to suppress the symptom, where instead, it's like, why is the body throwing me this signal? Like, why do I have such severe postpartum depression? And then you mm-hmm. look at the levels of inflammation, or you look at thyroid, you look at, you know, liver and gut health, and you're like, no wonder you're so depressed. Like, no wonder, mm-hmm. you know, your poor body. Yeah. And so if we can take that, like, your body is your best friend, like, it is your mm-hmm. home. It's always telling us, you know, something is off. I just think we've set like such a low standard for health now that people are like, I'm healthy. And I'm like, are you?
Yeah.
And do then you they live don't on this planet?
Realize, yeah. And then they don't realize until they feel better how terrible they felt before.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about the, you know, sperm causes preeclampsia.
Yeah. So not directly. We're not directly not causing.
Not quite right.
Right. But the preeclampsia is a placental disorder. And so going back to what is the quality of the placenta? What is the quality of the DNA that came in that's building the placenta, which is, you know, 50% him, or even, you know, there's some studies that are showing that he may have a little bit higher of a, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit higher of the
influence.
Yes, influence. Thank you. On the growth of the placenta. And so, again, how she feels can be directly correlated or related to what the health was and what things looked like of the sperm prior to the building of the placenta. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, and this is where I don't think we can separate it. Mm-hmm. I think we'd love to, but I don't think we know enough.
Right.
And so to say that there's only one factor that causes preeclampsia, I think is, again, undermining the whole process and how big it actually is and all mm-hmm. of the different components that happen. But we know that the DNA fragmentation is going to have a big role on the quality of the embryo, therefore the implantation, the miscarriage risk, mm-hmm. and the development of the placenta. But there's also, what are the nutrients that the body has that it's working with in order to be able to build that placenta and in order to obviously build that baby. Mm-hmm. Again, I'll go back to, like, if you don't understand why you're not getting pregnant, if you dive into the research of understanding what has to happen during pregnancy and all the nutrients that are involved, then it's almost like the answers are right there in front of you. And I think it's really powerful to, like, dive very deep into understanding the methylation and, like, it's not just vitamin D, like, or CoQ10. Mm-hmm. It's literally, like, you know, it's a list. It's vitamin A and vitamin E and all these B vitamins and zinc and vitamin C. And then you're like, so why don't I just take all those things and then cover my base ground? And it's like, why don't we do that, Dr. Lisa? Why don't we just take everything that the body needs? In theory.
Well, yeah, in theory, but also we don't know what your specific body needs and where there are lack of nutrients or what other parts of your body are impacting why your body's not either absorbing mm-hmm. the nutrients, if you're just getting rid of the nutrients, or, like, you have to go one step behind it where you can load up on your supplements, but you might actually just be overwhelming your body if that's not what your body actually needs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just creates a mess, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I mean, coming from somebody who used to do that, okay, you guys, mm-hmm. like, I share these things so you don't have to make the same mistake. But sometimes we have to go through our own process. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, no, let me see if it's different for me.
Yeah.
And there is so many nutrients. And if you just try to supplement everything, you will absolutely overwhelm your body. And like Elisa, you were saying, how do you know you're absorbing it? How do you know there isn't, like, iron is a really good example. What if you need iron, but the reason that you need iron is because you have this crazy infection in your gut and or in your blood, and now you're taking iron and you're feeding infection
it.
And mm-hmm. just, it's crazy. So how many, if you're listening to it and I was like, yeah, I've been on iron supplements for forever and my iron is still not going up. Mm-hmm. I know. It's like, you need to get off that iron immediately because you're making this infection stronger. And then we need to treat. And I did Armin Labs, which is kind of the gold standard in some of the infection panels on blood work. And she has had low iron for like 3 months. And it took her a long time to just, like, get the blood test organized and done. Like, we could have done it sooner, but it's, you know, the timing works the way it does. And it was also over the holidays. I was like, you can't take iron. You already did an iron transfusion that caused a bunch of mess for you. Like, you literally developed rheumatoid arthritis because of whatever was in that blood. But if you take iron again, you're just going to feed this infection. And so mm-hmm. you're going to have low iron and you're going to hang out and you're going to be tired and you're going to have some shortness of breath. and we're going to figure out what's causing this low iron, and then we're going to treat it. And so it's like, yeah, it sucks. For 3 months, you're going to be tired, but I'm not going to give you something that I know isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, I think like there's no way I could do that if I don't have testing.
Yeah. And the body is going to prioritize things. So when the placenta is lacking nutrients because of the structure that it was built off of, it is going to leach that from mom. It is going to take those nutrients from its host, right? So that's going to take it from mom. And so you could even, you know, preeclampsia associated with the lack of the nutrients, the, you know, which we want to make sure. Even after you are pregnant, we love to support our clients through pregnancy as well. So some of that stuff is very avoidable, where if we're doing the proper testing and getting the proper nutrients and, you know, supplementing what mom needs, you know, you can have a much better pregnancy as well.
Yeah. And I think we can see it coming a mile away. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to do regular testing on the woman when she's pregnant, mm-hmm. and especially if there has been like prior complications. The, you know, in first trimester, you want to get a, like right when the woman is pregnant, you want to understand the HCG rise, the progesterone. And then in the first trimester, you need to look at iron levels, at thyroid, at blood sugar, at liver, like kind of how is the body doing as this pregnancy is developing. And then every trimester you want to be doing it, because preeclampsia doesn't happen overnight, and you can start to see those liver enzymes elevated, or you can see blood sugar. You know, one of my pregnant patients right now, her HbA1c is at 5.6, and the midwife is like, oh, that's great, you're fine. But then at 5.7, you're considered pre-diabetic. So which one is it? Is she great or is she pre-diabetic? You know, I think it's, unless it is flagged on the test, they just don't even look at it. They just look at, oh, nothing is flagged, I'm good. And that's usually because the volume of people that they're seeing is so high, they can't sit there and like look at all of your stuff properly. And so many things get missed.
Or not even taking the time to test until symptoms are pregnant, present, where I've seen it time and time over, where these women are getting through their pregnancies and they're getting to into their the end of their third trimester, and they're like, oh, you know, all of a sudden I went to my appointment and they said I had preeclampsia, and now I'm getting induced, and then I had a C-section. And it's just this cascade of where we can test and we can take those proper steps to make sure that that doesn't happen to you, because it's just unfortunately so common.
Yeah, for sure. And with, you know, my case that I was just talking about is like, I'm like, no, I want you at 5 or below. So if we need to put a continuous glucose monitor on, I will. And obviously not on every pregnant lady, but most of my patients now are used to data. So I don't want to say they disassociate from data, but because I don't want the data to make them anxious. What I say is like, I just need you to collect the data and share it with me, and then let me interpret it and let me tell you what to do with it. I don't want you to go down a spiral and Google things and whatever, because it's like, let me be the Google, let me be the filter. And that usually works, so then they're not anxious. But I want to understand when the blood sugar is rising and when you're like, oh, I am eating a lot of protein, but I'm also craving a lot of fruit recently, or I'm craving this, or I'm eating a lot more bread, or I'm eating whatever. I want to be able to understand that and give you specific information and go, hey, this is elevating your blood sugar. And elevated blood sugar is inflammation. And then usually we're going to see a disruption with your cholesterol, like your triglycerides or your LDLs, which leads to further inflammation, which then, you know, oh, now blood pressure is starting to creep up. Like it never happens overnight. And the women are just so brushed off as they're, you know, coming into appointments, be like, no, you're fine, the baby's growing great, you're good. And the woman goes like, oh, I guess I'm just supposed to be tired. I guess I'm supposed to be brain foggy. I'm a little bit dizzy, but I just need some more water. And it's like, no, you have freaking blood pressure issues. Like we need to do something about this now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just because something's common doesn't mean it's normal. And pregnancy doesn't have to be hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it doesn't have to be a horror story.
Miserable. Yeah. Yes. Better word. Yeah. Better word.
Yeah. That's it. So, I mean, I think the DNA fragmentation and the pregnancy outcomes and how it's, you know, going to drive the growth of the baby and the preeclampsia. This is why we work with couples. It's just like, it's 50-50, and that what the male brings to the table is more than just the sperm. Literally, you know, and although that is the most important part for the whole thing to happen, but there's so much more, you know, there's so much more there. Let's talk a little bit just about the, well, we can talk about what semen delivers more because we have that in our notes. The cytokines, the prostaglandins, the immunomodulating factors, and the basically inducing an inflammatory cascade in the female reproductive tract if that sperm isn't. And this is where, like, testing the seminal microbiome can be really powerful because you can see what the man is carrying and if the uterus even wants to accept the pregnancy and the sperm, or it rejects it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like that inflammatory cascade that has to happen where, like we talked about before, the semen is almost priming that. And as much as we talk about like infection or inflammation in the female reproductive microbiome isn't a safe place for an embryo to implant if that's present. If it's present in the sperm, it's the same story, right? It's not a safe environment for the baby to implant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it now just becomes part of the microbiome of the baby, and then the traveling of the, you know, of the development of the actual embryo and the implantation is... It's like the egg has to have enough energy to be able to essentially fix whatever is going on within the sperm and then do the fertilization and then like move through the fallopian tube and then do the implantation. And that is all highly dependent on mitochondrial presence and mitochondrial function. So if that mitochondria is depleted or it has used up all of its energy, or even if that egg is older and we can see that on the numbers, you know, you could see how the woman's body is doing in her levels of inflammation. And it'll tell us the direct kind of reflection of her egg quality. It's not an exact measurement, but, you know, if I don't see strong ovulation, if I see really high inflammation, it's like, I know that oxidative stress is high. And there's more tests, I think, that are coming out. We'll be able to get a better idea of that. But yeah, it's like, it's just a highly demanding, energy demanding process. So if we use all of that in the first bit of the pregnancy, essentially there's not much left for the rest. And so, you know, the pregnancy terminates or it just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The last note about, like, does the man build the placenta? It's like, it's the placenta is fetal tissue and genetically half paternal because the paternal genes, the sperm epigenetics, will very much shape the placental growth. But it is still the download that originally happens from the mom and the dad in the zygote. There's still maternal tissue that's at play here. So do you want to talk quickly about how we want to assess and optimize preconception?
Yeah.
For males?
So we touched on this a little bit, I think, kind of throughout, but you want to get the big picture. So we want to look at the DNA.
Not just the sperm, not just, we want, like, deeper in the sperm, but then it's like, you're not just sperm, males, I promise you.
So looking at, you know, sperm analysis is important, but we're also looking at the morphology and the DNA fragmentation. We're looking at a blood work panel. So looking at, you know, all of the comprehension of the male there. We're looking at the gut. We're looking at the microbiome, the methylation, super, super important, which I think a lot of times is getting missed in other areas, like the methylation.
And
still
testing
blows
your
my
MTHFR
mind.
Is not just your methylation.
Not just methylation.
It's great if you know, and we test the genetics because we want to understand, but MTHFR is one gene in the folate cycle versus in the methylation cycle. There's, you know, at least 13 genes that are direct, and there's lots that are indirectly impacting it. And the nutrients that are involved. And there's still things that we don't quite understand about methylation that is to come. The research is very quick right now with AI, and just there's lots of things coming to the surface, which is great. But yeah, we have people all the time be like, I got my MTHFR tested. It was good or it wasn't bad. So now I need more folate. And it's like, no, that's not what that means. But sometimes you actually need the B2, process. You need B3. Yeah. Like you might not need folate at all. You might actually be bogging yourself down with too much folate, and you don't have the other cofactors to help the body use the folate. So I just want to put that, because we see that all the time. And it's like, it's not just the MTHFR gene, you guys, I promise.
Yeah. But what's your detox capacity? What's the oxidative stress look like in your body? What is the environmental toxins like bogging things down? So just, you know, you got to look a little bit deeper. And then the methylation tells you a lot about what those disruptions in the sperm analysis could be. So like showing us, you know, if there's low morphology, like where is it at? Like, is it in the head that directs back to the DNA? And, you know, it's like you have to look a little bit deeper rather than just like, is the sperm going in the direction that we want it to go in, and how many of them are there?
And I mean, even when we look at a sperm analysis, I want to know why it's not good. And the sperm analysis is not going to be able to tell me that. The sperm is just going to tell me that there is some significant issues within the sperm, but it's not going to tell me why. So I have to look at the gut. We have to look at the nutrient panels. We have to look at inflammation and cardiovascular risk and all of those things. And then we can say, this is probably, this is the likely thing that's driving this. Because if your cardiovascular markers, or like your LDLs are through the roof, or your triglycerides are high, and the blood sugar is dysregulated, like the blood vessels are all inflamed, you're going to be using up a lot more EPAs, the omega-3s, to help keep that inflammation down. And one of the structural components of the sperm is to make sure that you have enough EPAs and just omega-3s. And so you're not going to have them because you have all of this inflammation that's coming out. So like, yeah, you can start taking it, and it is absolutely beneficial. But if we don't get to the root of why that blood sugar is so dysregulated, and so that's why it's all so connected, you know, to the pathogens, to the toxins, to your lifestyle, to your family history, like you name it.
And we have to look at the big picture, and then we have to prioritize, like what needs to be cleared first, what needs, you know, needs to be supplemented first. And it's when you start looking at the bigger picture, and, you know, this has been really like eye opening for me too, to like see all of these additional testings that I wasn't as exposed to before, to like see that interconnection of how we know every system impacts the other system. But it's just,
When you see it, it's different.
It's crazy.
When you see it, it's different. And here's what I want to finish off with. I have, and this could be you, like, but so-and-so got pregnant and they never had to do anything. And I think that sucks, that they got pregnant and here you are doing everything possible and you're experiencing multiple losses, or you're just not even able to get pregnant. The truth is, it's like you have no idea what that pregnancy is like. Even when that person says everything is great, you have no idea. You're not living in that person's body. You're not in their environment. You just don't know. So comparing yourself, we say it's the thief of joy. But in reality, it's like, do you genuinely want to trade places with this person? Because if you don't want to trade places with them because you actually think they're super unhealthy, then why are you comparing the fact that they got pregnant and you didn't? And it's like, don't get me wrong, I get it. I think it's super frustrating. It's actually very frustrating for me because I know what that does to that child and the issues that that child is going to have, not just with fertility, if they even get to that point. Do you know what I mean? So it's not about what happened for so-and-so. It's about what is your journey? What is your body telling you? Because your fertility journey should be your healing journey. You should be healing as you're going through this and literally like transforming and making yourself a better human. So then you can build, you know, the family that you want. And the stance that, you know, we take as practitioners is like, we'll help you figure out how to have a baby. It might take you longer than you think. It might take you way more money than you want. It might not be in the way that you envisioned it originally, but like, we'll help you figure it out. What I'm not going to do, though, is skip the foundational basics, where my goal for you is to have a healthy child. And so if I have a male partner that smokes pot who has okay sperm, and they're told that their sperm is fine and they're not the problem, but 3 months later, when they cut out the weed, they get pregnant. You know, like, you don't, I don't need to see a study. This is my study. My patients are my studies. It's like, that has happened to me, to my clients multiple times now, where the male was like, yeah, but my sperm is fine. Is it really the weed? And it's like, yeah, it's the weed. Cut it out. Yeah, it's the nicotine. Yeah, it's the alcohol. Like, yes, you already know the thing that you need to do. And just because so-and-so got pregnant being high all the time or drunk all the time is like, is that like, who cares? Is that what you want? You know?
Yeah, I think that's a really important, thing to close on is, like you say all the time, Dr. Jane, 100% of our clients get healthier. Like, the healthy pregnancy is the goal, but we're optimizing health. You know, we're building those healthier pregnancies, stronger placentas, and
one placenta at a time.
We're having, and then we have healthier babies. So, like, it all goes hand in hand, and it's all really important.
Yeah. Well, thank you for picking a great topic, and hopefully, you guys have a better understanding of the role that the sperm has in the development of the placenta and the embryo, and some of the things that we can do to support.
Yeah, I love it. Thank you.
Of course. So, thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.